Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf alongside Nick Wright, Kevin Wilds. Chris Broussard is with us on a Tuesday morning. We got a real fun show for you today. I say that every day. This one is particularly fun. I promise you, we'll revisit at the end to see if I was right. Why the Carolina Panthers might be to blame for Cam's unemployment. Why Tua can't be the next Dan Marino. And why we may be losing Nick Wright to the Cleveland Browns. I'll let that sink in
for
just a glorious second.
Good run,
but we start in the NBA because our guy Broussard is here. A return could very well be right around the corner. According to a recent report, the National Basketball Players Association in talks with players now to get feedback on possible return scenarios. The league is also reportedly considering a 1 through 16 seeded playoff format with no conferences, something the league's been flirting with for a while now. So let's take a look at what that would actually look like. And when you look at it, Nick, there's some interesting scenarios that just sort of jump out at you, one of which would have the Lakers and Clippers in the NBA Finals. So there's a lot to take in here. Nick, what do you make of a 1 through 16 seeded playoff format if there is indeed an NBA return?
Well, I do believe there's going to be an NBA return, and I think this would be a totally unnecessary, superfluous change that could be really unfair to certain teams, particularly, you mentioned them, the LA Clippers, and I'll explain why in just a moment. Now, I understand some folks will say, in the age of coronavirus, in the age of a pandemic, things are just going to be unfair, and that I totally understand. But there is no need for this. This would simply be using the fact that because of coronavirus, they're all going to be in the same location to experiment with something they've been talking about doing for years. But I do want people to go back. The reason we initially started talking about should you seed the playoffs 1 through 16 was because there have been years where the 10 seed in the West, a team that misses the playoffs, would have been the 7 seed in the East. And so the idea was make sure you get the best 16 teams into the postseason. But this year, whether you seed it this way or the traditional way, it is the same 16 teams. And I would argue that while you potentially have a few more interesting first round matchups, if the seeds hold, the second round gets worse, the third round gets markedly worse, and I think it's unfair to change the rules unnecessarily on teams midstream. I think one of the reasons, now I have been a big critic of the way the Clippers handled their regular season. However, they handled their regular season under the belief we have to go through the Lakers no matter what, and then probably the Bucks in the finals no matter what. So seeding doesn't matter so much to us. To then change the rules on them, and again, I'm been a Clippers critic, but to change the rules on them to where it's like, well, actually, had you gone all out this regular season, you could be in the position the Lakers are in, where you only have to go through the Clippers or the Bucks, where you only have to go through one of the other top three teams in the league. It's just grossly unfair, and I don't see why it's necessary. I don't think you should change the rules, Wilds, once you're already into a season, unless you are forced to. This is something the league is not forced to do. It would just be taking the opportunity to do because they're all in the same place and travel's not an issue. I don't see the need for it, Kevin.
Well, I see the need for it
because first of all, it's super fun, Nick. You never mentioned the word fun, which this is the funnest playoff format we've seen since in the history of the NBA. So if the question is, am I voting for it? I'm not only voting for it, I'm parking the cars. I'm the old lady that welcomes you into the elementary school. I'm the kid that's selling you apple cider donuts. I'm the guy checking your name, and I'm giving you the sticker, I voted sticker. I think this is a wonderful proposal, Broussard. And I'll give you one reason why they should do it, Nick, outside of just fun. The Jordan documentary did a 6. We just saw an exhibition golf match do a 5.8. The first round of the playoffs, about 3 million people watch them. So they're in an opportunity right now to be as aggressive as possible and say, hey, we've got a unique opportunity. Let's push to get as many people and drum up as much interest in the NBA as possible. That's an opportunity right here. If they do the same old seeding, the same old, fine. But when they come out of that first round and they're doing a 3, then they have no one to blame but themselves, Broussard.
Nick, you're right about one thing. It's not necessary. I'll give you that. However, it's great. I love it. I've been calling for this for about 10 years, so I'm glad they're going to experiment with it, you know, if indeed they do this. But remember, if they start in late July, they're going to be battling the NFL for ratings. So you need as much juice, as much pizzazz as you can get. And this, it's not a guarantee, but this increases the likelihood that LeBron James and the Lakers get in the finals. And I think we'd all love to see that. And it increases the likelihood of not a Lakers-Clippers Western Conference final, but a Lakers-Clippers final. That is tremendous. Now, you said it's unfair to the Clippers. I think it's better for the Clippers because they don't have to go through LeBron and the Lakers in the conference finals. They just have to go through Milwaukee. That's not easy. They got Boston maybe in the second round. That's not easy either, but it wasn't going to be easy either way. I think this is easier for them than it would be if it was just the Western Conference. Remember, Kawhi Leonard, with what I would say was a lesser team last year, took out Giannis and the Bucks in 6 games, beat them 4 straight in that series. So it would set up a nice grudge match between those two as well, potentially, which is more exciting. So I'm shocked, Nick, that you don't like this. Because I think it creates more excitement.
Nick, your eyebrows tell me that you disagree with the most of what Broussard just had to say.
Yeah, you're right. This would be good for the Lakers. This would be good for my guy LeBron. But I'm not going to base my take on what you're trying to reverse engineer the best outcome for the Lakers. It's about fairness. It's about if the NFL changed the playoff format before the year started. If at week 12, they're like, hey guys, by the way, we're adding a playoff team and the 2 seed doesn't get a bye, that would be wildly unfair. And I'm not a Clippers fan, but if I were the Clippers, I would say, you gotta be bleeping kidding me. That you have made it so the battle for LA, we thought we were going to get this in the conference finals, have to play each other no matter what. Now, I'm still skeptical, by the way, that the Clippers under any format are going to be one of the final 4 teams remaining, but set that aside. Now you're telling us that LeBron, in theory, is going to get for a chance to go to the finals, get a chance to go through the Raptors again, get a chance once again. It's the damn Raptors you got to beat to make the NBA Finals. And so I look at this, and yeah, we could do the winners and losers of it. To me, I don't think people really care that much about Denver outside of Denver, but this would be a huge win for Denver. Instead of Denver potentially having in the first round Houston and in the second round the Clippers, they would have in the first round the Pacers and in the second round the Raptors. And I think this would be very bad, not only for the Clippers, but we also have to acknowledge the Bucks. And so the Bucks now have to beat both LA teams. That's not what they signed up for. And you're talking about them going up against Wilds, the NFL, for ratings. The NBA Finals are going to do great no matter what, whether it's Lakers, Clippers, Lakers, Bucks, doesn't matter. Or Clippers, Bucks, do great no matter what. The conference finals, which would also be up against the very beginning of the NFL, would be worse under this format. A Bucks-Raptors conference finals, the defending champion, the team they beat last year, and a Lakers-Clippers conference finals is outstanding in all regards. A Bucks-Clippers is very exciting, and Lakers-Raptors, there's no history there. There's nothing there. And so I just think it's unnecessary. And I don't think you also, and here's the last point for me, Wilds, on this. It's another reason folks would want to add an asterisk to this season. They're already going to try to potentially do that. I don't think you give people an extra reason to say, well, how much did this season really count when they changed up the playoff format right before? You said fun. Single elimination is fun, but nobody's proposing that because it would be a terrible way, Wilds, to crown an NBA champion.
I'll go another route, Nick. If you look at the first round, and you've got LeBron versus Kyrie, and I know Durant is not coming back. Durant's not coming back, everybody. Durant's not coming back. But just food for thought. We'd be around 400 days of Durant's since Durant's surgery. That is beyond Boogie's return. It's beyond Chauncey's return. It's beyond Kobe's return. That is a lot of time that he's had time to rest. And I know he's not coming back, but we'd be at 400 days. The Lakers versus the Nets, I think, would have so much excitement. Just the Kyrie LeBron alone. Leave Durant out of it, Broussard. I think it's worth changing the format just to see that matchup.
Well, look, I know Nick Wright well, and I see now what his problem is. If the Lakers were to win under this format, he sees the potential for people to put an asterisk on it and criticize LeBron for it, which would be completely unfair. So I'm with Nick on that. But Nick, I don't get it. This is not unfair at all for the Clippers. If I'm the Clippers, I'm like, yes, we don't have to face LeBron. Now, I think they would have been the favorite in the West anyway. But the fact that they don't have to meet LeBron and the Lakers in the conference finals, I mean, Milwaukee's not going to be easy. But I'd rather have to go through them than go through the Lakers. So I think this is outstanding. I don't understand why you don't like it. And, you know, you said you don't switch midstream. Well, we had a pandemic. I mean, everything is right on the table now. We can switch what we need to.
But that, to me, is a red herring here, because this would not be being done because of the pandemic. They would be using the pandemic as an opportunity to try something they've been talking about doing for a long time. If the NBA had to change things, because if you had to totally reseed everything because certain teams could only be in Vegas and certain teams could only be in Orlando, I would not be criticizing it. This would be using this circumstance to try something out, and it's unnecessary. And I know you said it with a smile, but I'm going to push back on the reason I'm against this is because people might then put an asterisk on LeBron's title. Nobody watching this show has any questions about who my favorite basketball player is, who I think the greatest basketball player of all time is. But I would also hope nobody watching the show questions this. My significant lifelong commitment to take integrity.
Oh,
the easiest thing in the world for me would be to come on today and say I love it. Because it does make it easier for the Lakers. It does make it harder for the Clippers. It does make it more likely that my prediction that the Clippers won't make it out of round two comes to fruition. All of that sets up well if that's how I wanted to do things. But I'm just trying to be fair here. And if, again, I think that the Clippers would have approached the regular season far differently if they knew there was a way to avoid playing the Bucks and the Lakers. Evidently, there is a way for one of those three teams to avoid having to play the two others. We thought it was be in the East and be Milwaukee. Turns out it's get the number one seed in the West and have the Clippers not care if the Raptors pass them in the standings. And so I just don't think it would be an equitable way to end the NBA season. It wouldn't be the worst thing ever. And either way, by the way, no matter what format we do, single elimination, best of seven, reseed, we're getting Lakers-Bucks. We're getting Giannis LeBron, and we're getting my preseason prediction of Lakers in six over the Bucks. That's happening pre, post, during pandemic. But the route there doesn't need to be changed yet.
Back here with Coach Eric Mangini. We're drawing a blank. Former Giants All-Pro running back Tiki Barber gave us some insight on why Tom Brady may have left the Patriots for the Bucs, with Tiki saying, quote, "It's great to win, but sometimes you want to have fun." Cyndi Lauper said the same thing, by the way. Nick, Tiki's reason for Brady's leave in New England is blank.
Revisionist history, and I'll be quick here because I really just want to hear Coach's answer on this. Coach is the star of this question. It's revisionist history, though, because Brady wanted to stay. Brady desperately wanted to stay. This is, again, this is your wife leaves you, and then your friends are asking you about it. And you're like, ah, she was a nag anyway. It's like, nah, bro, you were begging. You said, we'll go to counseling. I'll do anything for you not to leave. And then she left, and you're like, ah, I didn't want to be there anyway. So it's revisionist history, even though I'm sure it will be more fun with the Tampa Bay Gronkaneers or whatever the hell they're calling
Gronkaneers,
themselves.
There you go.
Yeah, that's so interesting, Nick, that you take a shot at Tom Brady. There's nothing that said he totally wanted to be back there. But I think that there's a little bit of discrepancy there with that answer. But to me, this is a Philly special. And in regards to the idea of it being more fun in Tampa Bay and that being the priority for Tom Brady, that's absolutely wrong. When you go someplace and pick up $60 million, you've got a loaded group offensively, you're facing history and your legacy. The last thing that you're doing in terms of a decision is making it because it's going to be the most fun. You're going to have wacky Wednesdays and casual Fridays. That's not what he's looking for. That's not how it works for Tom Brady. And you saw it when he played golf. He was having fun playing golf, but he would have been happier if he had won at the end of the day.
So Coach modified his answer because last week when he was on, he said Taco Tuesday, and we exploded and thought it was a shot at LeBron, so he changed it to Wacky Wednesday, which, by the way, is on tomorrow on the show, Wacky Wednesday. We've all wear your silly is hats, guys.
I will.
I went with Arians-esque, and here's why. I didn't know. I listened to this interview. Tiki and Rondé, one of their early babysitters was Bruce Arians. If we have this photo, Jenna Lane from ESPN wrote a great article when Rondé Barber was being honored by the Tampa Bay Bucks. And this is good old Bruce Arians. The quote here, Bruce Arians wasn't kidding around about having some wild hair. And yes, he really was their babysitter. Although Arians said to me laughing, I'm cool, the cool uncle you like to have a drink with, not a father figure. So Tiki is a little bit biased here since he's commenting on one of his early babysitters that their parents were friends. So overall, good for Bruce Arians.
I've never seen Bruce Arians without that hat. I thought he was born with the hat on. On to Tua now. The Dolphins rookie got some advice from a Hall of Famer recently. Warren Moon saying Tua, quote, just has to be himself. He can't be Dan Marino. Nick, Warren Moon's advice to Tua is blank.
Spot on. And I like Warren a lot, but I think Warren is showing his age a bit just by even alluding to Dan Marino. Dan Marino, when he played his final game with the Dolphins, Tua Tagovailoa was 1 year old. Since then, give me a moment here, the following people have started at quarterback for the Dolphins. Fiedler, Heward, Lucas, Greasy, Feely, Rosenfels, Farratt, Culpepper, Harrington, Lemon, Green, Beck, Pennington, Henney, Thigpen, Moore, Tannehill, Cutler, Osweiler, Rosen, Fitzpatrick. That's 21 dudes. It's been 20 years and 21 starters between Marino and right now. So yeah, Tua, don't worry about being Dan Marino. Just try not to be Cleo Lemon or Tyler Thigpen, and you're already a step in the right direction. So, Coach, I say it is spot-on advice by Warren Moon.
Yeah, to me, this is sage advice. And unfortunately, a lot of the young guys coming in don't know the history of the league as well as they probably should have. I remember I was coaching a guy from Dallas who didn't know who Tom Landry was. But that being said, it's sage advice in the sense that you need to make sure that you're doing it your way. And one of the mistakes I made as a young head coach was taking too much from my football fathers, Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells and not doing things as authentically as I should have done. And to me, this is a really smart way to approach things for Tua.
Jenna, I went with ouch here because later on in this article, it's really good by Cameron Wolf. I just got a shot to the, I got a gut punch. I got a kick in the back. We can put up the quote here. The great thing for Tua is Dan Marino retired 20 years ago. So it's not like he's falling right behind a legend like Aaron Rodgers following Brett Favre or whoever follows Tom Brady. I mean, guys, we've got two quarterbacks. Got Jared the Javelin and Brian Hoyer, Warren Moon.
Tip of the iceberg. It's going to be a long season for Kevin Wildes. On to the Kansas City Chiefs now. Their high-powered offense continues to receive high-powered praise. With CBS Sports ranking Patrick Mahomes, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and Tyreek Hill as the best quarterback, running back, wide receiver trio in the NFL for this coming season. That despite the fact Edwards-Helaire hasn't even played a game for them yet. So, Coach, I know how much you love polls and lists and rankings before a season even starts. The Chiefs being named the best NFL triplets of 2020 is blank.
Yeah, to me, this is not right. And not right in terms of this should be on Nick Wright's radio show. Because, look, I don't know how you can put a rookie quarterback or a rookie running back on this list and surpass what they have in New Orleans when you got Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, and Drew Brees, or even the situation in Dallas. This is a Kansas City radio segment that I'm sure Nick will talk about a lot, you know, later tonight and the rest of the week.
What a shot.
Go ahead, Wild.
Nick, I like the quadruplets from Dallas. I throw CeeDee Lamb in there, too. But, Jenna, I can't believe what I'm about to do here. This topic came up in the meeting, and Nick got super excited. I am going to take a sledgehammer to Nick's take integrity, because when there's a list of top 1,000 NBA players, Nick is like, oh, why do they have Michael Redd? Is 10 spots too low? This whole list is invalidated. But then when you see a list with the Chiefs number one, he's like, guys, we should put this in the show. This is a solid list. This is a respectful list. There's a lot of thought went into this.
Yeah, okay, because it's
he's
accurate.
Got a point,
so here's
Nick.
The deal. Before I give my answer, if I were to say to you, what's the best female musical group ever? You might say, some might say TLC.
Bangles.
In Vogue. You could go to, yeah, I was going to say to Jenna's era, the Go-Go's or the Bangles. The Supremes, some would argue. But the right answer is Destiny's Child. And do you know why answer is Destiny's Child? Because Destiny's Child is the only female musical group ever to have Beyoncé. And if you have Beyoncé in the group, you're the greatest group ever. If you have Patrick Mahomes as part of your triplets, you're the best triplets in the league. So I don't care if the running back is Clyde Edwards-Helaire and if the top wide receiver instead of Tyreek Hill is Thomas Hill. Doesn't matter. If that guy is the one throwing him passes, they're the best triplets in football. Pick the running back. And again, in this analogy, I guess Tyreek is Kelly Rowland and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is Michelle, who went on to a nice career in the gospel scene, by the way. Nothing against her. But listen, it's Destiny's Child. Mahomes is Beyonce. It's the number one answer. It's the correct answer. I love so much that I literally had, though, the Bengals written down as a joke to make about what Jenna would say. And before I could even get it out, Jenna was like, the Bengals. Are you going to say the Bengals?
Wait.
Is that the answer? I love it so much.
I was going to say the Pointer Sisters, but I landed on the Bengals instead, and you were right. I hate when you're right. All right, finally this morning, the Cleveland Browns are taking part in the All-In Challenge. This is so cool. So the winning bid will give not just one, but two fans the chance to help script the first 15 plays of a preseason game. Our guy Nick's been bragging for years about his one can't-miss play that he'd love to see in the NFL. So, Nick, the Browns offering a chance for fans to script preseason play calling is blank.
My big break. Now, once upon a time, I was made fun of for designing this play. I don't need 15 plays. I need one play, and this is what we call the 3rd-and-20-plus penalty bait play. So here's what we're doing, Coach, and you break this down for me, please. We're going double tight end max protection. We're putting the quarterback in shotgun, and our three wide receivers' only job on this play is not to get open, not to catch the football. We are only trying to draw a flag, which is why we're only doing it on third and 20 plus, third and impossible. You've got your slot and your wide receiver. They're going to run zigzags just to try to draw an illegal contact or a defensive holding penalty. You think you're running a slant? No, I'm going out here. I'm going back just to try to get illegal contact. The guy who's running the streak, again, if you throw it to him, the quarterback knows, you have to throw it underthrown by 5 yards. So he comes back to try to get the pass interference. We have three separate opportunities to get an automatic first down on third and 20. I don't understand. I think Tony Romo stole this idea from me and talked about it on television last year, but I've been talking about it 4 years. Coach, talk to Brian Daboll or one of your friends in the coordinator game and tell them they can license this play from me.
I don't know what to make of this. It kind of looks like a punt formation. It kind of looks like some stuff that Jake did like years ago in his little make-believe playbook too. To me, this is refreshing from the Browns, because typically in the preseason we're talking about, you know, how great they're going to be or there's some kind of trouble. And over the course of time, there's been plenty of plays that the Browns have run that look like someone from the stands had called them. And look, I was probably guilty of some of that when I was the head coach too. But I love this idea. I think that every team should probably adopt this idea where you do something in charity with charity in the preseason to give a fan experience of drawing plays. And you can ideally get, you know, some outstanding stuff like what Nick drew up, I guess.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
It's a good idea.
It's a good idea. Just to put a button on it, Jenna, as soon as they get the first down from Nick's play, I think you got to just give the ball to Nick Chubb up the middle. I know everyone wants to come up with a lot of creative play, but Nick Chubb is out here working out just like, hey, guys, just give the ball to me. Bench pressing. Squatting about 585 pounds,
insane.
I think. So Nick Chubb ready for, if you want to draw another play up for Nick Chubb, maybe he can run one of those zigzag routes.
That's insane.
Again, so, you're not going to convert a third and 20. You've got to try to draw a penalty. The NFL emphasized illegal contact defensive holding. It's 5 yards, but an automatic first down. You don't think that'd be more successful than the draw plays or screens these teams run on third and forever? It's the obvious thing to do. Go ahead, Jenna.
So I've been listening to you guys for years talk football and plays and X's and O's, and I kind of just sit back and let it all sink in. So it said two fans could come up with a play. So I drew one up yesterday, just based on everything that you guys have taught me over the years. It's simple. It's a deuce right out Z close 38. Obviously, Odell double reverse pass. But look what's happening here. This is what I think would work. So you have Baker there, hands it off to Chubb, right? Chubb shifts right, gets it to Jarvis. You see Jarvis there. He then swings left over to Odell, who throws it to Kareem Hunt in the deep cross. That's third and 15, 20, third and forever. I think that play right, and I don't know, it just feels like something like this could work. And I don't even know if I have all those. Do I even have enough players on the field? I don't know. Just something that sort of came to me. Coach, is this even a thing?
That actually looks well thought out and well put together and not depending on some penalty to execute. And I think that...
So nobody has to zigzag?
No, you're utilizing all the different playmakers on the team. There's misdirection.
I'm going to let America see that I'm wearing orange sweatpants.
This is fantastic. Good
Deuce
job.
Deuce right, out Z, close 438, Odell double reverse pass, and we lost Nick Wright. It's like win-win for everybody. We got to take a break. Back here on First Things First. Make sure you check us out tomorrow. Enos Kanter will join us to talk about the NBA's possible return. Should be a fun conversation tomorrow morning right here on First Things First. And joining us now is Super Bowl champ Greg Jennings. Greg, we're talking some Cam Newton. Let's talk about Cam, specifically why the 31-year-old free agent can't seem to find a team this offseason. One reason could be health. Coming off a year where he played only 2 games because of injury. The other reason could be this. One anonymous NFL GM said Cam is, quote, His decline is evident. Nick, you've been on the Cam corner since the beginning. You think Cam's decline is evident?
Well, I thought it was. And then I happened to, unlike this anonymous GM, evidently, watch the 2018 season. Listen, Cam was an A-plus player in 2015 when his team went 15-1, when he won the league MVP, running away with it. And then in 2016, he was not nearly as good. And in 2017, even though they made the playoffs, he was not nearly as good. But in 2018, prior to his shoulder giving out on him after the TJ Watt hit, he was playing the best football of his life. A career 59% completion percentage was up almost to 70%. He was nearly 300 yards a game. It's 26 touchdowns if you add the rushing to it, to 7 interceptions, and a passer rating of 104. And he was once again, as he has throughout his career, he was doing it with unproven or average at best wide receivers, which is what he's had to deal with his entire time in Carolina post Steve Smith. I mean, the last time we saw Cam in a playoff game was January of 2018, so a few months before the 2018 season started. They would have won on the road in New Orleans if Cam had anybody that could reach his level of play at the receiver position. Kalen Clay dropped Cam couldn't have handed him a touchdown pass any better. Look at this early in the game. This is just a momentum killer. Just dropped. Perfect pass by Cam right in the breadbasket, and Kalen Clay drops it. Despite that, late in the game, Cam has driven them in range for a game-winning touchdown pass. Third and 23. Turn around, Devin Funchess. You see the score? Down 5, less than a minute left. This is in New Orleans to win the game. So, if Cam is some guy in decline, Wilds, as opposed to a guy who hurt his shoulder and then broke his foot, this anonymous GM is watching different film than I am.
First of all, shout out to Anonymous GM, one of our favorite guests on this show, provides us with a lot of news. So Anonymous GM, always welcome on First Things First. Someday, go out for a drink, but don't know who you are.
Not today.
You know what got me thinking, Greg? When we were watching the match, and we thought, who's on the front nine and who's on the back nine? We had the old quarterbacks on the back nine, and me and Dusty, our researcher, said, let's divide up the quarterbacks, who's on the front nine and who's on the back nine. We don't want to say a decline, who's in decline, but I would actually argue if you're on the back nine of your career, you might be still pretty good. Here's a quick list. Big Ben, Rivers, Carr, Foles, Stafford, Rodgers, Cousins, Matt Ryan, Breeze, Brady. He put Goff on there. I'm not putting Goff on there, Dusty. Brady. So I don't think if Cam is on a little bit of a decline, okay, is he going to be literally flipping into the end zone? Maybe not. Is Cam Newton still a great player that should be on your team, Bill Belichick? Probably. Do I still like Jarrett the Javelin? Yes. Should you put a call into Cam's agent? Maybe. I'm just saying the decline might be slight, but there's a ton of quarterbacks on decline who are still pretty good, Greg.
Yeah, I agree. And one thing about the National Football League, what they try to do is they want to label you. And with Cam Newton, obviously we know his injuries and what he has not been able to do up to this point and showcase the talent that he obviously possesses. But once they label you, and they're labeling Cam as declining, as injury prone, and several other things possibly, but they label you to devalue you. And that's what I feel like is happening with Cam Newton. He's a great player. He's proven to be a great player who has set the bar so high that if he ever does not achieve that level of standard of play, which he set for himself, the precedent was set by himself and himself only, then yes, everyone's going to say, oh, he's not the same player. If he doesn't match the MVP, the offensive player of the year, the getting his team to the Super Bowl in the next year and the year after, he doesn't come anywhere close, people are going to say, is he the same player? And that's fair, but you can't just say that about Cam Newton when it's a team sport. It's yes. Did he get that team to the Super Bowl? Pretty much offensively on his own? Yeah, but he had a great, great, great defense. Was his defenses the same the following 2 years? They were good. They weren't as good as they were that year. And so for me, it's one of those deals where once you start getting labeled in the National Football League, everyone starts jumping on that label bandwagon and saying, yeah, that's why we don't have them. That's why we don't have them. But there is not one general manager, anonymous or not, that can sit here and tell me that Cam Newton is not, forget the starting quarterbacks, that he's not a second tier guy following a starting quarterback. It's not even a question that he is more than that.
And the problem is there doesn't seem to be anything he can do about it right now. Teams can't bring him in to work him out. You know, he can't get on the phone and convince people that he's healthy again. So he puts out videos. He says he's willing to be a backup somewhere. He seems to be putting all the work in. You know, Greg, is there anything he can do at this point besides just let the labels fall where they are? I mean, have you ever experienced anything like that where you've been labeled one way, but you can't really convince the rest of the league you're not that guy anymore?
Yeah, well, he's doing everything that he possibly can and everything that he should and everything within his power. For myself, you know, I got labeled as being injured, old, and not as fast as I once was, couldn't create the separation. And it was all predicated on the fact that I left Green Bay and I no longer had a quarterback that could put the ball where I needed him to put it, period. I played a dependent position. But what Cam Newton is dealing with is a team in the Carolina Panthers who going into the 2019 season said, okay, Cam's going to have to change the way he plays. We want him to be more of a pocket guy. We don't want him running the ball. Well, guess what? What makes Cam Newton special is the fact that he's a dual threat quarterback. The fact that he can be a threat with his legs as well as his arm. Let him be who he is. And so once you start to try and take away things that makes a player special and unique and great, then yes, his play is going to look a little different, but he still was able to produce outside of the injuries. I don't see why he's not on the team.
And he's been unfairly labeled injury prone because he broke his foot. Here's an inconvenient fact for the folks who have disliked Cam for a decade and have been waiting for an excuse to push him out of the league. Prior to breaking his foot, Cam Newton was eligible to play in 128 NFL games. He played in 123 of them. Prior to breaking his foot, his most games missed in a season was 2, and 5 years he played all 16. He played 16 five times, 15 once, and 14 twice. And then he broke his foot. A broken foot is not a spinal cord injury that takes you out of football unless people for some reason want you to have a reason to be out of football, Jenna.
NASCAR is back, and it continues tonight with the Gander Outdoor Truck Series. Then tomorrow, it's the NASCAR Cup Series, live from Charlotte Motor Speedway, beginning at 8 Eastern, only on FS1. All right, time now for stories to start your morning. And would you look at that? Today officially marks 50 days until Dallas can no longer sign Dak Prescott to a long-term deal. Cowboys legend Troy Aikman says, countdown, schmountdown. I don't know if he used those exact words, but he said Dak will get paid. Nick, as Hamlet would have said, to deal or not to deal, that is the question. Not sure he said that, but does a deal get done?
It certainly does not get done before that countdown gets to single digits. It might not get done until that countdown gets to less than 3 days. I think I would be shocked if it gets done before July 10th or 11th. And I think we are a coin flip proposition on whether it gets done at all. If Dak was willing to play last year without signing a $100 million guaranteed deal when he was only slated to make a couple million bucks, you think he's going to have a weaker negotiating position when this year his worst case scenario is $31 million? If this deal gets done, Wilds, It is going to be for a price tag that leads this show for a week, because it will make Dak Prescott the highest paid player in the history of the NFL, and nobody thinks Dak Prescott's play merits that, Wilds.
Yeah, that will be. It'll lead the show until Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson's contracts come around. I don't care if Dak is not the top quarterback in the league or if he's top five. He's what you got, and he's up. So you got to pay him. That's where we are in the scale now. I think this gets done. I was that kind of worried, but Troy brought me down to not worried at all, Greg.
Yeah, I'm on the other side of it. I was saying that I thought it was going to get done. I'm of the belief now that I don't believe it's going to get done. And I think it's because Dak Prescott does not want to agree to what the terms the Cowboys are throwing out at him. And he feels like he deserves more. And he is in a position where if he does play out this franchise tag and he doesn't get a contract within those 50 days, he feels like, I have the talent around me. I will do it all over again as long as I stay healthy and someone will pay me the numbers that I'm looking for.
All right, moving on to the Seahawks now, where offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer had some advice for the rest of the NFL in regards to his quarterback. Schottenheimer saying Russell Wilson is the wrong guy to doubt. Nick, is anyone still doubting Russ besides apparently the people that Schottenheimer is hanging around?
Well, I think Brian Schottenheimer is a great quote, and you need to repeat it like people do Beetlejuice three times into the mirror. Is that what you do? Beetlejuice, or you use red rum? What are you saying to the mirror? Point is, Brian Schottenheimer needs to be saying this to himself because he's the only one who doubts Russell Wilson. Which is why they're big off. They draft a running back in the first round a couple years ago. They're going to get him some help. So they signed Carlos Hyde. They kicked the tires on Marshawn Lynch. Everyone knows this is, I believe, a top two quarterback in the NFL. The whole world agrees a top five quarterback in the NFL, which is why it's so indefensible that Brian Schottenheimer, under your guide, they have been second and third in the NFL in rushing attempts the last 2 years, because you insist on taking the ball out of Russell Wilson's hands. I say his biggest doubter is the guy who's saying he's the wrong person to doubt. So Wilds, here's hoping Schottenheimer takes some of his own advice this year and they unleash the full Russell Wilson experience, so to speak.
Okay, I'll make mine quick until Beetlejuice shows up. I don't know if that counts if you're on TV or you actually have to be in front of a mirror. I thought the other part of this quote was interesting. He was saying that Russ is hearing this MVP talk and that he's not involved in the MVP conversation, so that's going to be a motivating factor for him this year, Greg.
Yeah, I'm not so sold on that part of the quote, but for me, I'm with Nick. Yeah, when we saw Russell Wilson a couple years ago in the playoffs in Dallas, down in Dallas, and we all knew that it had to be Russell Wilson or nothing for them to win, that wasn't the case. They stuck with running the ball, and who's in charge of play calling? The guy whose quote we're reading. So I'm with Nick. If Schottenheimer doesn't heed to his own quote and advice of just let the man grip it, then he's the problem.
All right, let's talk some Mike Tyson now. Earlier this month, Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship offered the 53-year-old a $20 million contract. And now they're apparently doubling down, offering Tyson even more money as well as charitable donations. Nick, come on. Should anyone step in a ring against a bare-knuckled Mike Tyson?
That's the thing. Jenna, you nailed it. The issue is not getting Mike Tyson to agree to a certain amount of money to fight someone bare-knuckled. It's the issue is finding someone who will put a monetary value on dying, on their life. It's like, all right, how much money will it cost for you to die in the ring at the hands of Mike Tyson? Bare knuckle? This is with gloves, and the guy he's sparring with is wearing pads, and you can see in one of the highlights, the guy's like, he kind of got me there. Through the gloves and through the pads. This is insanity. No one's going to sign up for this. What was this? The Hunger Games? The Purge? Like, no. This is lunacy at Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. There's no amount of money anyone should accept to sign up for that right there, Wilds.
Here's the other crazy thing about this. $20 million isn't that much money.
Floyd made $275 million against Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor made $100 million. So take your $20 million and send it down the road. If you want to talk about $100 million that these exhibitions have been drawing, let's talk about that. But $20 million, I'm not waking up for that if I'm Mike Tyson.
Since when is $20 million not a lot of money? On what earth?
When you got $275 million.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I totally disagree, but I'm not fighting Mike Tyson bare knuckles. I mean, if I want to see what the opponent would get offered.
Honestly. All right, finally, we got to get to this. You guys ever hear of this 10K calorie challenge? Not 10,000 calories consumed, 10,000 calories burned. So just a modest 125-mile bike ride, 1.25-mile swim, 4-mile elevated hike, and 3-mile run over 18 hours to burn over 10,000 calories. That is how Ram safety Taylor Rapp did his challenge. Greg, would you ever do this with me and Nick this weekend?
No, absolutely not. Number one, because I'm not swimming over a mile. That's not happening. Like, I might ride the bike for half of that.
It's like 90 laps in the pool.
I'm out. The swimming, I'm out. I'm done. And I can swim, but I'm not swimming like that. That's just not happening. And you got to swim in open water probably somewhere. Yeah, no, I'm good on that.
All right.
Well, Jenna, I did the math on this. It's 125 miles from my house to Pat's Cheesesteaks in Philadelphia. And I was like, oh, I could actually make that. That actually feels like a doable thing for me. I got on my bike at 6 in the morning, and I get there about 7 at night. Nick, I don't know how many nicotine patches you would need to complete this. You would be taking them like Gatorades, like on a marathon.
Yeah, I don't know how many either, but it's something like we could have put, there's so many things we could put in there that seem awful. You know, here's a better question. Would it cost more money for me to sign up for that bare knuckle boxing match with Tyson or to sign up to try this with Jenna this weekend? I think that's a coin flip. I'm not sure. Either way, I'm dying. At least the Tyson one would be a good story for my kids to tell. So either there's no. I mean, I'm not signing up for this. And Jenna, this seems like a tough putt even for you.
I know, but Nick, if you're going to go down with my face as the last thing you see. It's better me than Mike Tyson. You can't lose.
That sounds
We got to go. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day. Stay safe, everyone. Take care.